Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Impact of Technology and Organizational Culture on Improved Care Management conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to our moderator, Ms. Sarah Butterfield. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Culture and agency information that have been able to successfully implement telehealth. These presentations are structured for you to be shared learning sessions to allow the other New York State providers who've been able to demonstrate success in reducing avoidable acute care hospitalizations to share their stories. These calls afford you the opportunity to hear directly from these high-performing agencies on how they approach this initiative, share the barriers they encountered, and how they approach those barriers to achieve a positive end result. Those of you who registered for today's call were forwarded via email a copy of the handouts and presentation slides, and if you also should have received a program evaluation form. If for some reason you didn't receive those slides and evaluation form, they are posted to our website, the iPro website. At the home health section, you can scroll down to the upcoming events, and you'll see a link for today's presentation, which will bring you to the slides and the handouts. As a reminder, as Shelley shared with you, this conference call is being taped, and it will be posted to the same section of our home health website, and it'll be under the past events section to make it available to you for future review. As mentioned, all of your lines are currently muted, but following the presentations, we're going to be opening the lines up for all of your questions, any comments, and some further for discussion. Following that, I'm going to provide an overview of the Home Health Quality Initiative National Campaign Intervention Package 2 strategy, which addresses emergency care planning. And if any of you participated on our April 4th conference call, I did review the same information on that call at the end of the call. So if you have heard the presentation on the emergency care planning that I did on that day, please feel free to disconnect. You don't need to listen to it a second time. Now, at the beginning of the ACE scope of work, as part of our contract with CMS, we were asked to recruit agencies in New York State to participate on a voluntary basis as a member of what was deemed the Systems Improvement Organizational Culture Change Identified Participant Group. And this group consists of 19 agencies within New York State who all volunteered to be part of this group. And we challenged them with three initiatives. One was working within their agencies to improve organizational culture in one or more of the areas that address communication, leadership, care coordination, patient-centered care, organizational learning, information management, teamwork, and quality improvement. And their improvement was based upon a baseline and remeasurement survey that their staff took at specific time points, and the agencies each developed a plan of action. One of the other initiatives was one all of you are working on, which is incorporating influenza and pneumococcal vaccination in the agency's comprehensive assessment. And then the third was implementing or utilizing telehealth or telephone monitoring as a tool to reduce avoidable acute care hospitalizations. And we are very fortunate to have with us for today's presentation representatives from one of those stellar high-performing agencies from our Systems Improvement Identified Participant Group who have been able to demonstrate the impact of telehealth on reducing avoidable acute care hospitalizations. It is my pleasure to introduce to you from the Visiting Nurse Association of Central New York, Amora Bango, who is the Director of Clinical Operations, Diane Nano, who is the Community Liaison and Clinical Manager, and Kathy Salvatera, who is the telehealth coordinator. And they're going to share with you some information with regards to their telehealth program within their organization. And Amora, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Sarah. Good morning, everyone. And thank you for letting us share our program with you. I know I'm speaking to most of you out there that are CHAs, and the beginning of our presentation is about a little bit about the VNA here. As you know, most of the VNAs were established in the late 1800s, and so we were too. We have a census of about 900, and we serve only Onondaga County. I'm going to run through this quickly because I know we're pressed for time, and I know you're interested in the nitty-gritty of our program. But we are on point of care. But interesting enough, our nurses started on point of care in 2000, and now all of our clinicians just joined us this year, at the beginning of this year. We provide services, as every child does, with skilled nursing and physical therapy. And we do have a great supportive staff, which really has made our program very successful. Some of our special programs, like many of you may have, are our HeartSmart program. That's our CHF disease management program. We also have a wound resource team that's made up of clinical nurse specialists, certified wound specialists, and clinicians from our five geographic areas that have shown an interest in this area of care. We also have a pediatric maternal child health program, our short stay program, and, of course, we're growing in home infusion and rehabilitative services. But the most important and new program of all is our telehealth care monitoring program. Now, the critical factors listed here really led us to implementing telehealth. We had been thinking about telehealth probably, I would say, even 2 or 3 years before we actually initiated it. But we knew we had to start doing something because I'm sure, as all of you experienced, we were seeing a shortage in nursing staff. Our caseload counts were going from 25 per nurse to anywhere between 35 and 40 cases per nurse. Our reports on our acute care and emergent care percentages were above the state averages, and we didn't really like the way that was looking compared to everyone else. Also, our bubble graph report was showing that our episodes were very low in patient outcomes, but we still had a high visit utilization rate. Also, one of our goals as part of our agency vision plan was to increase the use of technology. And with all these critical factors, we decided that this was the way to implement that vision plan by using telehealth. So we put together a task force team to research and develop a plan. We looked at those critical factors, and we knew that we wanted to improve patient outcomes, as any agency wants to do. We were wanting to improve our acute care hospitalization rates and our emergency rates. We also needed to better utilize our clinicians because that resource was not available like it was in years past. And there was still increasing demand of patients in our community for home care. So how can we do all this and still serve the clients of our community? We thought if we could reduce the number of visits per episode, then we would be able to take care of more clients. So by using a method of patient teaching, and this would be a new method of patient teaching, we were also hoping that clients would take more of an interest and responsibility for their health. So as I previously mentioned, we put a team together. And I think this was extremely important in the success of our telehealth program. It was an entire team of our agency. We had administrative staff, which included our president, our corporate counsel, our chief operating officer from a licensed agency, because we are part of a larger healthcare system, and we do have another child that specializes in palliative care, and our licensed agency was providing all of our paraprofessional and shift nursing staffing. We also included our directors, not only from our clinical department, but our finance and accounting and IT departments. We also had our nursing and therapy managers involved in the planning. We read as much as we could on telehealth. We went to national conferences, local conferences. We tried to bring back as much information from other agencies that I'm sure some of you out there to use your experiences and to implement our program. We finally decided to have Honeywell, HomeMed, and ATI demonstrate their products to our team. And we began implementing our present program just in March of 05, and I think it really started getting off the ground in June of 05. Mm-hmm. During the time of our research and planning, we also had applied for and received the grant from the New York State Department of Health. Now, once we made the decision to go ahead, there were still more decisions to make. You know, video versus non-video, leasing versus purchasing, what peripherals do we get, how many units do we need to start the program. Those were all questions that we had to answer. And really for us, non-video was more suitable for our client population. Also, we were hearing from some of the agencies at that time, and that was probably in 04, that the acuity of the video monitors hadn't been quite perfected. And so we started with the non-video. We also decided to lease because, you know, cost is a factor here, as I'm sure you all know. We felt comfortable with the basic peripherals because, again, in talking with other agencies, we needed to have patient buy-in, but most of all, nurse buy-in. And so we wanted to try to do it right from the beginning. So we started with things that our nurses were accustomed to and doing in the home. We also decided to start up with 15 units, and that was because we knew we were going to be getting the grant from New York State Department of Health, and we knew there would be 15 units with that grant. Also, we at that time didn't have a dedicated telehealth coordinator to monitor the clients, and we knew it was going to be an added responsibility for an existing position. And so we decided that this number was manageable for us. So now we're to the program implementation, and I'm going to turn the presentation over to Diane Nano, our clinical nurse manager who was involved with that. Diane?
Thanks, Amor. Okay, so now we're going to be talking about the actual program implementation, and once we decided on a vendor, we decided that our primary focus would be our CHF patients. As Amor mentioned previously, we have what we call our Heart Smart team, and those are that's a group of nurses, and we have one therapist also on the team and our nutritionist that take care of our Heart Smart or CHF patients. These nurses were selected very carefully, and they are more experienced case managers who have either extensive training in cardiac or interest in cardiac care, and we also provided additional training with cardiac care. They also tend to be a very respected group within our agency, and we thought that was very important. We also decided to target our Medicare clients because, as Amor mentioned before, one of our goals was to decrease our visits per episode, and that's why we decided on Medicare clients, and most of our CHF patients are also Medicare. At the same time, we developed program policies, procedures, and standards, and we did that in conjunction with our sister agencies who had already either implemented a program or were in the process of implementing a program. And also we had the assistance of our vendor who, as Amor mentioned, is HomeMed, Honeywell HomeMed at this point. The next thing that we did was, and again, we think this is huge, we selected champion nurses who were within the HeartSmart program who we knew would be advocates for the telemonitoring and would really buy in. And that was very important, the selection of those nurses, and there was a lot of discussion around it. So what we did was we selected two case managers and two admission nurses as our champion nurses, and those were the people who were going to be taking care of those patients. Also, we identified telemonitoring as our standard of practice, meaning it was the rule that we were going to put telemonitoring into our CHF patients and not the exception, and it was the expectation that all of these people would be monitored, again, within the limit of our 15 monitors. Okay, continuing on with the program implementation, the next thing we did was we educated our clinical staff with the expectations and the procedures of the program, and this was in addition to the champion nurses that we had selected. We educated our HeartSmart nurses and then the staff at large even though at that time only the champion nurses were using telemonitoring because we knew that we would be expanding the program. We developed a patient screening tool, and this was also in conjunction with our agencies that had already used telemonitoring and also our vendor. And the tool generally looks at how teachable our patients are, whether they have a caregiver who is teachable, and then things as basic as the wiring, do they have a phone, is the house safe. We develop procedures to catalog, store, and maintain the equipment, and we decided that we were going to have our storeroom clerk do the monitoring, and she keeps very good
tabs
on the monitoring. Excuse me. And then we selected the telehealth program coordinator. This is, again, huge. We decided that this person needed to be a registered nurse. We decided that this person needed to have expertise in cardiac care. She was one of our HeartSmart nurses and still is. We decided that this person needed to have extensive case management experience. The person that we selected has 20-plus years of home care experience here at CNA, and good rapport with clinical staff, excellent communication skills, and excellent critical thinking skills. What isn't quite as tangible, and she won't tell you this because she's sitting right here, are the personality traits that this person needs to have. This person needs to be positive, enthusiastic, passionate about the program, approachable, respected by the staff, and a sense of humor is definitely helpful. Initially, we decided on this person, and she happened actually to be one of our team leaders within the care center, and she was doing the telemonitoring part-time because, again, at that time we had 15 monitors and also triaging at the same time. So she was doing both jobs at that time. Important considerations. When we first looked at telemonitoring, we had spoken with other agencies, and there were some agencies that were only monitoring 5 days a week. We at the time decided that we wanted to take it on 7 days a week. Again, at that time we had 5 monitors. But things that you want to think about with this monitoring is, we have one manager who's on the weekends, and of course she has multiple manager responsibilities, so she has telehealth in addition to. Patient compliance on the weekend can be a bit of an issue, mostly because it's a break in their routine. They might not have aid service, they might not have their regular caregiver, and they might be out and about. So we spent a little bit of time searching for patients who weren't necessarily testing, and also limited access to physicians, especially primary physicians, tended to be less of an issue once we looked at more trending. Okay. Location of the central monitoring station. We are going to let you know that what we decided on initially was, again, within the triage area, we decided to move the central station once our coordinator was a full-time physician, and we'll tell you why. We decided that the central monitoring station needed to be separate from the care center, which is really the nerve center of our agency, but accessible to the staff and also to the care center. Reasons for this is fewer interruptions. We were having difficulty separating out how much time our coordinator was spending on telehealth and triage, so it's more accurate allocation of the staff time. And also a quieter, more calm area is more conducive to teaching, patient teaching, and case conferencing with our case managers. Okay. Initially, we used our champion nurses because we knew that buy-in was going to be very important as to our telemonitoring program. So our champion nurses did all of our installations and deinstallations. Again, that was two case managers and two admission nurses. We added more staff nurses as a program group, but again, initially that was who we had selected. Eventually, we hired an experienced home health aide who does installations and deinstallations, or assists with. She does not do all of them. Right now, she's working two hours, 3 days a week for us. She does about 30% of our installations. But we are looking at probably increasing her time, and definitely as our program grows. Okay, I'm gonna now turn it over to Kathy Salvatero, who is our telehome care coordinator.
Okay, hi. I'm also the person that mans the central station, and I'm going to talk about some of the practicalities of managing our equipment and how things are signed out to staff. We have a full-time supply room technician who manages all our other equipment, such as pediatric scales, adult scales, our oximeters, our room care supplies. So it was very natural that she should take on our telehealth monitors. When the monitors first came to us in their boxes, we logged their serial numbers and put them into packages and canvas bags. And in our canvas bags, we had all the extra equipment, such as three-prong adapters and triple and double splitters, so that you could be able to still plug in people's computers and phones and ERS systems using the telehealth monitor as well. Using supplying extra long telephone wires, we have 7 feet, 15 feet, and 25 feet. And along with a teaching packet of how to use the monitor, and a log book that shows that they can log their readings and bring to the physician. And all of these we have put our VNA logo on. And then our supply room technician will shelve these, and as the nurse has been assigned a monitor to install, she'll just go to the window and ask for the monitor, and everything will be signed out to her and to the patient with that particular serial number. The reason it's so important to really track your serial numbers is that as you go on and you find that this patient says that the oximeter doesn't work or a scale is off and you want to bring it in, it's very easy to lose track of where your equipment is. So it's just very important first step to do. When we have the nurses or our installer bring back the monitors, they are red bagged so our technician can clean them. She uses the same equipment or same type of aseptic wipes that you would use for MRSA equipment, which is a bleach solution. We've also found that, as everyone has, there are homes where there are critters, roaches, and we still put the monitors in. What we do is when they come back, these are identified. They're double bagged for 30 days. And that cuts off their food supply, and they will die. So we've had to actually shake out the dead roaches, clean the monitors well. You can, if you need to, unscrew the back, you know, to shake it out further and put the backs back on. But this has worked very well, and we've only had a few cases where that's been necessary. Another thing that we do is when the nurses say they're discontinuing the monitor, we keep that patient in central station until we know the monitor's in the building. Because with nurses' busy schedules, sometimes the time they say they're discharged and the time they come out of their trunk might be a couple of days. So that just is able to let the central station nurse keep track of where every monitor is and know who to contact when you're not certain. Okay, talking about coordination of care, we did expect that there would be some opportunity for patient education. We were really pleased and surprised in how well that has gone. When the patient has that immediate feedback, you know, the next day after they've had their hot dogs and beer, or the very next day that they've had ham for Easter, or, you know, celebrated with the 4th of July, they have someone calling and just saying, noticing a little change in your weight and blood pressure, Just that little gentle reminder that even though holidays happen and our family things happen, that that's when we tend to get sick. We've also found that when people's oximeters go down, that we're able to, well, I did start smoke, you know, have a few cigarettes, or, gee, I forgot to take my medications. And we've had some people who even anticipate our calls and say, I knew you were going to call, I rechecked my oxygen, and I was rushing this morning, I was in a hurry, I was running late, I rechecked it, and now instead of it being 84, it's 94. So we've really developed a very good rapport with our patients, and they really do buy in. I'm going to move on to the communication with case managers, and I'll come back to physicians. As far as the responsibility of who takes care of the problems that are found on the central station, is that's really a shared responsibility. Central station nurses try to do as much as they can to support our case managers, and anything that we can do from there, calling the physician, is done. A couple of examples of that is we had a patient who was new to us. We had about 3 days' worth of oximeters being in the high 80s, 87, 88, in the early morning. But if you asked him to retest in the later in the morning or late in the afternoon, he was fine. In speaking with his family, we learned that mornings he was very slow. He was a little bit disoriented. Maybe a little confusion. So we called the physician who ordered a nighttime oxygen. They called the oxygen company. We were able to fax the verification of need to the oxygen company. Within an hour and a half, that person had oxygen in his home. Didn't need a nurse to go out, and it really was a very fast turnaround. Of course, there are times, you know, when patients' weight will go up within 3 pounds within a day, and it's very clear that something needs to be done, and the central station nurse can call the physician for the extra Lasix for a couple of days. But there are times when it's not clear what somebody needs, and on very rare occasions, you'll have to ask a nurse to go out and see. And another example is that is we had a lady who was just put on a monitor. The second day, we try to call and just say, how are things going? How did the monitor go for you today? And her vital signs are unremarkable, and she happened to mention, well, I do have this pain in my chest, and it's kind of heavy, and I really think I just pulled a muscle. Everything's okay. So we had asked her to, you know, look over her medications, had her take a couple of Tylenol and rest for a little bit, as she was so certain it was just a muscular thing. She had no recent history of except for hypertension, of cardiac disease. But then we called her back within the hour. Her pain was not any less. Had her recheck her blood pressure. It was remarkably higher, but she was just so certain that everything was okay. It was difficult to assess. So knowing where she lived, checking with where her case manager was, we were able to call that case manager, and she went over to check her, who did send her to the hospital, and she was admitted for a rule-out MI. So it's just that's something we would not have caught until the next visit. The patient probably would have gone into the hospital with a more emergent situation. And then the other way that we work with our case managers is just keeping them informed of trends. As we see non-emergent changes, weights are slowly going up or going down. They're in the hospital, and then all of a sudden, within 2 weeks, they're down 10 pounds. Is that a desired thing or not desired? So you just keep them informed of what's going on so that when they go in to do that visit, they've got more information, they have a bigger picture of what's going on with the patient. Working with our physicians, it's been individual, depending on the physician, depending on the practice. Some physicians want to be faxed every single day, weekly. Others want to not be called at all. We have some that don't want faxes. We also found that our parameters initially were very low. They were like call if a systolic was above 160, and we were calling on individual vital signs, rather than giving the physician a trend, a big picture of what's going on, so that they could really decide on treatment plans. So we talked with other agencies. We talked with our vendor, who had a wider, more national approach of what other agencies were doing. We talked to our professional advisory committee. We talked with our nurses, and we came up with a new wider parameters that we use only on our home med monitor patients. And they are systolically if it's below 88 or above 185, diastolically if it's below 40 or above 100, if our oxygens are less than 88, or our heart rates are below 48 or above 120. Now, given if anybody is symptomatic or if they are with beyond their usual trend, we immediately call. We always call the patient first so that we can give the physician a full assessment of what's going on at the time. So I think I'll bring that back over to Diane for our clinical staff support.
No? Okay. Clinical staff support. This is huge. What Kathy does as coordinator, she really assists in the case manager in coordination of care. Our caseloads tend to be very high, and actually they're getting higher. So the case manager might have between 30 and 40 patients that they're trying to manage. So, again, she'll assist with the coordination of care. She'll assist with phone calls. She'll let the case manager know about trends. She might let the physician know what's going on with the patient. So it's the assistant in case management. We've been able to reduce the number of visits per episode by one per week, and really, for our HeartSmart patients, it's even more than that. We kind of calculated it yesterday at about between 6 and 7 a week, because our standard practice with a CHF patient that's monitored is 2 week 1, 1 week 8, 2 week 1 to make sure that we get all of our teaching in that we need to, and the 1 week 8 for assessment, and we can also decrease it later on in the episode. Also, we prevent unnecessary visits, and we're able to really target our visits when they're needed. So if our coordinator lets the case manager know that either a patient's out of parameter, their weight might be going up a little bit, or maybe they need additional teaching, we can really focus in on that time. And also, along with that, it's providing the most appropriate and cost-efficient follow-up, because, again, we can target our visits at that time.
Our community education, I can't stress how important this is, and it's still ongoing. We went to physicians' offices, hospital emergency rooms, any entity that we interacted with where our patients went. We brought our monitor, and we went out and demonstrated our monitor because, again, the physicians don't know that much about them. Some of them are coming on board now. Emergency rooms, the whole thing we would hear sometimes is, well, we know this will benefit home care, but, you know, how is it really benefiting us, and how is it benefiting the patients? So going on the road, you have to do, and you have to continue to do. We went to assisted living programs, continuing care communities, and our board of directors, because obviously in the beginning they had to approve our leasing of the monitors, and they promote the benefits of telemonitoring out in the community, and they are a consumer group. So where are we today? We have about 90 of our 100 monitors out, and we plan on growing. We have a dedicated full-time telehealth program. Our clinicians are recognizing the benefit. Our nurses are now referring their patients within their caseload to our telehealth coordinator. Our patient satisfaction surveys have been very positive, and we're still, I think this week we had to go to a physician's office again, but it's okay to go back a second time. We're building relationships, and that's a good thing. We have reduced our acute care hospitalization rate, and specifically so for our CHF patients we can see, though I know through iPro we're doing other measures besides our telehealth to reduce that hospitalization rate and the emergent care rate. Our patient outcomes are improving. We're seeing it mostly in our functional outcomes, and as Diane said, we do have fewer visits per episode. So our future plans are basically to expand our program, and of course we need to now maximize our reports and statistics. We're just starting to interface with our point of care system, and so we have great hopes to see all that information now that we've been collecting. And that's the end of our program. If there's any questions, I'll turn this over to the moderator.
Thank you very much. Shelley, if you could key everyone for questions, and I want to thank you guys for an excellent overview of your program and all of the information you've shared. And I'm sure we have some questions. Shelley, you can let them know how to key in.
Thank you. Today's question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you wish to ask a question, simply press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, it's star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just one moment.
Okay, while we're waiting for Shelley to cue, I just want to hit on some of the highlights that you presented. We hear from a lot of agencies that are trying to establish telehealth or strengthen their program that it's sometimes difficult to decide which patients go on telehealth, and I think the fact that you all identified that telephone or telemonitoring was a standard of practice for your CHF patients was key, seems to be instrumental in being able to know which patients the equipment should go to. Also like that you established criteria for the telehealth program coordinator and really gave a lot of thought to that. And then, of course, one of the other things we hear are the issues of physician buy-in and physicians actually understanding and being willing to work with the agencies with the telehealth equipment and providing standing orders. And I think that the concept of doing the community education is also key. I think it was an excellent idea. Did you find that you had more buy-in or physicians willing to work with you with standing orders or for parameter setting?
Yeah. Okay. I'll speak to that. This is Diane. Initially, we used our standard parameters here at the agency, mm-hmm. and what we found was those parameters were really too tight. And I know that Kathy spoke a little bit about that for the purpose of telemonitoring, because as our program developed, and we're still in the process of this, we realized that really we were looking more at trends and not necessarily the vital signs for that day. So initially what was happening was we, as Kathy said, we were making calls that weren't necessarily very important to the overall care of the patient. And once we decided that we were going to widen the parameters and look more at trends, the physician buy-in really was more there. And in fact, we made a call yesterday to a physician's office and really stressed that we're looking at trends. And also, it's very important to say that the symptoms, the patient's report of symptoms is huge, because many of the doctor's offices don't really want to know about just numbers. They want to know about the symptomology.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Our first question comes from Tracy Sokoloff. Please go ahead.
Hi. Well, this is Tony from Isabella. Work with Tracy. My question is, what do you use for connectivity? Do you use cable or DSL line for your equipment between your office and the patient's home?
Okay. We have found that we were told that we couldn't use digital, but we found working with our Time Warner cable, it works fine as long as we connect to the wall, that we don't try to connect to their modem. We cannot use DSL. So people who have like AT&T DSL or Vantage, we can't make that transmission. We currently do have two clients, one that has AT&T and the other one has Vantage, who the primary nurses really wanted to keep a closer eye on what's going on. And these two individuals were identified as compliant, reliable patients, and they have a monitor, they take their vital signs, and they call the central station every day with their vital signs and what's going on. So that's how we have handled that.
Okay, thank you.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, it's star 1 on your touch-tone telephone.
Yeah. Hi, ladies. This is Vicki. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Just to make a few comments. One, a very impressive implementation plan, and just wanted to comment, and what a large amount of time you took to plan for your implementation. One, that it was multidisciplinary, and that you included all departments. I think what a lot of organizations may find themselves, you know, and the situation they may find themselves, is they may have thought that there was a large amount of planning, but then find out a year down the road that maybe the planning could have been a little tighter. So I give you a lot of credit for the amount of time you spend planning this. And also your conservative start to only have 15 monitors and not to overwhelm the staff with the demand of getting it out quickly. So I give you a lot of credit for that very conservative start and a really great implementation plan.
Thank you.
And just another note on that, too. We continue to have our task force meetings on a monthly basis on telehealth because you're right. You can kind of lose track of things in the busyness of the days and the weeks.
Right. Excellent.
Our next question comes from Kathy Borsinger. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kathy Borsinger from Good Samaritan Home Care. My question has to do with the weekends. Could you go into a little more detail about your weekend process with telehealth?
Sure. This is Diane again. I'll speak to that. Again, we have at this point one weekend nurse manager, and she at this point is managing all of our monitors. But we're in the process of instructing. We have two nurses that are being trained right now to assist with the management of the telemonitoring on the weekends. They happen to be LPNs, and they're going to be having the oversight of the manager if there are any assessments or any questions at all. If anyone is out of parameter, they will have her oversight. But they are two LPNs that we are instructing at this point, and they're going to rotate the weekend.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, it's star 1 on your touch-tone telephone, star 1 to ask a question. There appears to be no further questions at this time.
Okay, Shelley, thank you so much. I want to thank Amor and Diane and Kathy for sharing their expertise and also, which also speaks to the leadership of the organization. They have Indy Shelby, who's their president and CEO, with them today, also for support for the call. The information I think you shared is very valuable to all of the agencies, and we certainly appreciate you sharing all of your expertise with us.
Thank you,
Sarah. Thank you. As mentioned previously, as we did the introduction of the call, I'm going to just do an overview for you for the Home Health Quality Improvement Campaign on emergency care planning. This would be on your second set of slides that came to you for the presentation. What I'm going to do in the essence of time is move to the emergency care planning section. The first part of the presentation talked about the campaign reports, and most of you have gotten your reports and have had success in interpreting them. If you have questions on how to interpret the reports or just not sure what those reports are showing you or telling you, if you would just contact us, we'll be happy to walk through with them looking at your report in front of us and answer any questions you might have. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to move right to slide number 9, and at the top of that slide, it talks about emergency care planning in the definition. I wanted to remind you that each of these campaign monthly intervention packages are posted at the first business day of the month to the Home Health Campaign website at www.homehealthquality.org. So the packages don't come from us. You actually go to the website and you download them. What does come from us, from IPRO, is the monthly reports that will come to you via hard copy. But if you haven't had an opportunity to visit the website for the April package, Emergency Care Planning, you can go right there and download either the entire package, the fast track part, or the individual tracks for your staff. The April package, as I mentioned, focuses on the emergency care planning, and slide number 9 gives you the definition of that, which is the established agency process that includes all activities, tools, and policies and procedures that are used to assist clinicians with educating patients, caregivers on what actions to take if a medical problem or change in condition occurs. And as you can see there, it assists the patient caregiver in determining who, what, where, when, why, and how to respond to changes in health status. So this really addresses those issues what the agencies have as far as the patients not calling them when they go to the emergency room, not knowing that the patient's gone. And it provides the patient with some, and caregiver with some structure to know exactly what is happening with their disease management and when to notify the agency to intervene. The caveat to the emergency care planning as opposed to the risk assessment tool which you looked at last week, there's a lot of upfront information and reports to review for the development and design of your risk assessment tool. You need to know what's driving your rate, test the tool. And with the emergency care planning tool, really you have templates provided right in that intervention package. The design of them are not really too involved, but the challenge with this also with the emergency care planning tool is how to have the staff implement them at start of care in every visit, to review them on an ongoing basis until the patient and caregiver really have an understanding of the care plan itself. On slide number 10, you can see that emergency care planning overall is the process, and what we're going to be talking about is the emergency care plan, which is the specific patient tool that you're going to be developing and implementing if you feel that it's applicable within your agency. So the definition of that patient emergency plan is a written plan that helps the patient and caregiver to identify emergent health problems, determine who to call regarding the problem or change in condition, whether that be the home care agency, the physician, or EMS if it's an emergency. And really think of that patient emergency plan as the foundation of the whole emergency care planning process. It's the tool that you're going to use to review each of the steps with the patient and caregiver to have them call you when a change in status occurs. On slide number 12, you'll see that the purpose is to educate the patient and family caregiver to identify changes in condition. And again, the key here is early on, so that they can call you first for intervention, except for those real true emergencies. And it allows the agency to intervene, which may help keep the patient at home and prevent an avoidable acute care hospitalization. There's some similarity to those zone management tools, the red, yellow, green zone tools that some of you are using, many of you are using, but the patient emergency plan is in a more generic format, which you'll see when we start looking at the templates that are provided in the package. So on slide 14, you'll see some examples of the sample emergency plans, and again, these are provided on the campaign website. They're provided to you in Word format, so that you can customize them for your agency with your particular agency number and anything that you feel would be appropriate and important to have incorporated into the emergency care plan tool. You can see on slide number 14, there's an example of one that provides agency information, phone numbers, and other important phone numbers for the doctor, hospital, ambulance, and fire. And as you look at the example, as we've reviewed some of these with our agencies who've been using them, what stands out here is the provision at the bottom of the after-hours number and all of the important information at the bottom that a nurse is available 24 hours a day to assist you in the event of an emergency. Please call 911. We encourage you to look at the tool if you're currently using one and really look and interpret it from the patient and caregiver perspective. One of our agencies had shared that 911 was at the top of theirs in like 55 font, and their agency number was at the very bottom in 14 font. So it really kind of drove the patient to think that the first thing they should do is dial 911 for all issues. So look at the one that you have in designing and look to see what could be improved with it. The wording on some of the others that we've seen kind of discourages the patients from calling after 4 p.m. So if you note here, it's very clear to the patient. It's short and sweet, big, huge letters, that the essential information is there, that the agency is available 24 hours a day, and the important things to do to call, the important numbers listed there. Slide number 15 gives you a screenshot of the generic plan itself. This, again, is very similar to those yellow-green, red-yellow-green zone tools that you've been using. This is just page one of, I believe, a 3- to 4-page generic plan that's provided to you for the intervention package. And you can see for this one, if you've got black and white slides, you won't see it, but each of those columns is color-coded. What to do, and you can see very simple language, I heard, I have trouble breathing, call my home health agency when. There's opportunities to customize, as you just heard, the VNA of Central New York share, they have parameters. This tool actually provides those parameters to the patients as they have, so that the patient's able to have a role in monitoring their progress in disease management. And you can see that the third column talks about calling 911. So it really gives the patient and caregiver a structure of knowing what is a true emergency, when to contact the agency. And again, this tool is provided in Word format so that you can customize it for your particular agency. So you can add or delete whatever you feel is appropriate. But if you look, for instance, at I have trouble breathing, or let's look, I have fever or chills, there's actually a parameter of when to call the home health agency when the fever is above, and the agency can fill in that parameter, or the patient has chills and can't get warm. And again, the importance of this is to provide it at start of care, resumption of care, patient and caregiver, and to reinforce it each visit so that there's an understanding from both the patient and caregiver of when it's appropriate to call the agency. And again, to share that the goal of using this is really to prevent avoidable acute care hospitalization and to help the patient be able to manage their illness and disease process at home. Obviously, if there's a true emergency, they will need to go to the emergency room, and that's shared with that same tool. As you look on slide 16, the patient emergency plan, as you look at both of these tools, they're designed using a symptom model as opposed to a medical model. And again, it's to gain and accommodate the patient perspective and to provide a better understanding so that they know what falls into what category. So the focus is on the use of patient-centered and patient-identifiable terms. The samples that are provided, again, for you to customize for your particular patient population. So you can choose to condense that into a one-page form or remove the icons or reformat it, whatever is you feel is appropriate for your particular agencies. These are also, think of these as patient teaching tools. They really provide guidance on self-management to the patient and caregiver. They don't replace the importance of your clinician's assessment, and you'll note on the sample one we just reviewed, there is a disclaimer at the bottom of the tool that it doesn't override patient caregiver decisions on when to seek care. It's, again, really a self-management tool for the patient to better understand what is happening. The sample templates posted to Word format on the campaign website are there for you to customize. Keep in mind the guidance that's provided to you on slide number 17. Awareness of the patient's risk factors will assist the clinician in developing a more specific patient emergency plan. Multidisciplinary staff involvement is really essential in designing the tool. You really want to use those the staff, the clinicians that are there in the home with the patient when you're designing your specific tool for your agency. And keep it at a language and a level that the patient's going to be able to understand. And again, that clear, large font is also helpful for the patients. Include pertinent agency information and clear guidelines that enable the patients, caregivers, to reason through on how to respond to a change in health status. Now, once you've designed your tool, you want to keep in mind how important the implementation process is. Again, the tool must be used by all staff consistently for it to be successful. It can be used and should be used at start of care, resumption of care, and every visit, and by all clinicians that are in contact with the patient, and that includes RN staff, therapy staff, social work, and also the home health aides. Some of the agencies with this tool and also with the red, yellow, green zone self-management tools have found it very helpful to review them with the home health aide so they have a better understanding of what's going on with the patient and really can trigger a call to the nurse or the agency to let them know that there's a change from what they've seen the previous day. The importance of leadership, as always, and leadership support and staff buy-in are really essential for successful implementation. This is not going to work, and staff need to be held accountable and know that this is an expectation within the agency if it's going to be successfully implemented. Some of the agencies that have been using this tool and the self-management tool also have a protocol for where to post the tool within the patient's home. Probably not a good idea to leave it in the start of care folder along with all of the other paperwork. A lot of agencies have had success with posting this tool to the patient's refrigerator where it's seen often, where it's accessible. Some have even purchased magnets with the agency name and phone number on them and then post that right with the document on the refrigerator. So it can be accessed for every visit and referred to and, again, for that reinforcement of education. On slide number 19, you see some guidance as far as design and implementation. As we've encouraged you to do with all of these tools is really to include all the disciplines in the education regarding the tool and also the development of the tool. Reinforce that emergency plan every time that you're visiting the home and evaluating their understanding. And some agencies are using this tool or a scripted screening tool to verify with patients via telephone call where their emergency plan is located. If they've just come on to service, how are you doing? Have you had your medications? Have you gotten from the pharmacy? Have you scheduled your doctor's appointment? And just basically, how are you doing here the first, second, third day home? And that can be incorporated as far as where the emergency plan is located. Does the patient know where it is? Do you use it? Do you understand it? Very scripted screening tool, which can be utilized for support staff calling the patient's home just to check on them. On slide number 20, you'll see some information about internal monitoring. This is not new to you. Many times, once you've implemented the tool, you want to make sure that the staff is using it appropriately. And same guidance as we've provided you in the past, 10 to 15 patient records on a monthly basis. You're looking to see if there's evidence that the tool was provided and that it's reinforced on each visit. You also can look at your patients hospitalized the previous month to see if the patient caregiver notified the agency to know that this tool is actually working because it's important to know that it's working from the patient side too, that they're calling you before they go to the emergency room. And also when you're looking at that second page of reports, we've seen a lot of agencies for that reason for hospitalization for the other category that more than 50 to 60% of their reasons for hospitalization are the other category. So this can also be helpful if the patient does call to let you know what reason the patient went to the hospital. And look, again, can contribute to looking at what's driving your acute care hospitalization rate. After 2 to 3 months, if you're comfortable that the tool's been implemented and you can switch to maybe an every 6 month monitoring process, but don't drop the monitoring altogether because it can easily be something as simple as the tool is left out of the start of care package or something happens within the agency and you find that the staff have stopped using it. So on slide 21, you'll see some next steps to consider. Does your agency have a structured on-call program in place for after hours, weekend, and holidays? Because, again, as you noted on that one tool, it tells the patient that you're available for 24 hours. Does the agency provide regular education to the on-call staff related to interventions that reduce avoidable acute care hospitalization? And partnered with that is, do your on-call staff know who your high-risk patients are? And are all of the disciplines responsible for education of emergency care planning with the patient and caregiver? And again, I encourage you to review these tools with your home health aides within your agency who are really the eyes and ears for the patients that you're caring for. And then finally, do all of the patients have the necessary supplies and equipment? So if you're asking them to monitor their weight or their blood pressure, do they have a scale? Do they have a blood pressure monitor there to be able to do that with to report a change in condition? And on slide 22, you'll see that This is also posted to the website. It's a poster. It's a screenshot of a poster that you can post within your agency to really remind staff of this particular intervention. Every visit, every contact, remind your patients to call me first. Again, just a visual reminder to the staff that you're working on this initiative and the importance of the use of the tool and reinforcement at every visit. You can see so far in the campaign, we're into month two, and you can see on slide 23 we provided you again with the list of monthly packages. Next month in May, we're going to be focusing on medication management, and that call is scheduled for Wednesday, May 9th from the 9 to 10 time slot. And we did send you the second quarter calendar. If you can, I'm going to send that out again via email to all the primary and secondary contacts today just so you have it on hand. Basically, what it falls out for the months of May, June, and July, the second Wednesday of the month from the 9 to 10 a.m. time slot, we're going to talk about each of the monthly intervention packages for that particular month. So we'll be moving on to med management for the month of May. I'm going to open the lines up just for some questions and comments, and the remainder of the slides, again, provide you with our iPro project team contact and also the contacts for each of the four state associations that have partnered with us for this initiative. And with that, Shelley, could you just open the lines up to see if there's any calls, please, or questions?
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, it's star 1 on your touchtone telephone. Star 1 to ask a question. Please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. It's star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just one moment, please.
While we're pausing, I also wanted to share with you that some of the other states have shared with us the Spanish version of some of these tools. So we'll be posting those to our website, the iPro website, the home health section, within the next couple of days. So if you have a Spanish population, you can access those tools. Any questions, Shelley?
There appears to be no questions at this time.
Okay, great. Again, I'm sorry we ran over a little bit here, but if you have any questions on any of the information, please feel free to give one of us a call. Again, I want to thank the representatives from Visiting Nurse Service of Central New York, and I hope that you found these two presentations today very beneficial to your quality improvement efforts. And thanks again for joining us.
That does conclude today's teleconference. Thank you for your participation. Have a lovely day.